Welcome to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff, in studio with Chase Palmieri. On today's program, we're joined for the hour by muckraking journalist Dave Lindorf. His latest piece is an exclusive for The Nation magazine, The Pentagon's Massive Accounting Fraud Exposed, How U.S. Military Spending Keeps Rising, Even as the Pentagon Flunks Its Audit. Later in the program, Dave Lindorf will join in a conversation with Chase and myself about the passing of the late 41st President of the United States, George Herbert Walker Bush. We'll be trying to set that record straight. So tune in to the hour here for Project Censored with Dave Lindorf.
Crimes perpetrated by the criminal minds, political ties, habitualized alibis, disguise, another guise of democracy, politics, and the apocalypse. Got the skies looking ominous. So the ocean burned bright with waves full of poison. Genocide wars fought for little boys, and the weapons manufactured paid for by taxes, while the bridges and the levees and the mines collapsing. All the prisons build the capacity, citizens. And the times for the master thief, combine and conquer, steal a masterpiece. Open your eyes and realize what's happening. Time's running out to reach all potential. If you ain't at the table, then you're probably on the menu. We got that love.
Welcome to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff, with Chase Palmieri. On today's program, we are joined for the hour by legendary muckraker Dave Lindorf. Dave Lindorf is, of course, no stranger to Project Censored listeners. Lindorf has numerous Project Censored awards over the years, and he also writes for This Can't Be Happening. He has a recent piece in The Nation magazine that we're going to talk about today. And we're also, of course, going to talk about the ongoing corporate media and bipartisan state hagiography concerning the death of President George Herbert Walker Bush. So for the hour, we'll be talking about some of Dave's recent research. We're going to get to that in a minute. Dave Lindorf is also a Nation contributor and writes for Salon, London Review of Books, and Tarbell.org. He's the author of four books and was a 1990s Hong Kong-China correspondent for Business Week. Dave Lindorf, welcome back to the Project Censored Show.
Thanks a lot for having me on.
You have an exclusive piece published November 27, 2018 in The Nation magazine, The Pentagon's Massive Accounting Fraud Exposed, How U.S. Military Spending Keeps Rising, Even as the Pentagon Flunks Its Audit. And this story is one that's been ongoing for you, as we've had several iterations of this in previous Project Censored books. So, Dave Lindorf, tell our listeners what's going on with this article and what's going on at the Pentagon.
It's a fascinating story. The Pentagon has, for almost three decades, been thumbing its nose at an act passed by Congress in 1990 called the CFO Act that mandates that every unit of the federal government have an auditable budget and be audited annually by outside auditors. And it took a while, but every unit in the federal government has come into compliance with that, except for the Pentagon. And the Pentagon has just steadfastly refused to do it. They keep saying, oh, we can't do it because we have legacy systems and they don't talk to each other and we're so huge. The thing is, they had legacy systems in 1990, like when we were using KPRO computers, but it's been 28 years. And during that time, they've been receiving hundreds of billions of dollars every year from Congress. You can't keep saying we have legacy systems if you aren't buying the ones you need to do the trick. They've had plenty of time. So basically, you have to assume the other alternative, which is that they simply don't want to be audited. Anyway, they've gone all this time, and this year, Congress finally, or late last year, Congress finally threw up its hands and said, all right, we're just going to pay for this audit, and you're going to do it. So they allocated $900 million to hire big accounting firms led by Ernst & Young. And 1,200 accountants have been poring over the Pentagon's books for about 10 and a half months or so, and they came up with nothing. So November 15th, when they were supposed to report back on their audit, they reported that they couldn't really do it. I think the only two units of the Pentagon budget that they actually audited, and this should tell you something, was the retirement fund and the payroll. the brass at the Pentagon wants to make sure they get their retirement money and the soldiers get paid so they don't riot. But aside from that, it was a total fail. And I mean a total fail. This was not a question of doing the whole audit and then having a comment letter that says this one section has something screwy in it. They just couldn't do it. This is the kind of thing that if it was a big public company like Apple or GM or GE or something, it would be banner headlines and every news report and the company's stock would tank and maybe it would go bankrupt. This is really a disaster. It should have been, you know, just the fact that the Pentagon with 54% of the tax dollar going to it, it can't be audited, and we don't know how they spend their money. We can't know how they spend their money, whatever they tell us. Should have been, I think, a moon landing headline in the New York Times and the Washington Post. Pentagon fails audit. But it wasn't. I think in most of them, it wasn't even first page story.
That doesn't surprise us here, because I was looking through the Project Censored archives, and the Pentagon money pit, you know, was a story from a couple years back, $6.5 trillion in unaccountable army spending with no DOD, Department of Defense, audit.
That was my story.
It sure was. That's why I mentioned earlier, you've got a history on it. If somebody can write a story on this, it's Dave Lindorf.
When I did that story, all I was saying, really, in the story was I saw in the alternative media that number, and I looked for it in vain in the corporate mainstream media, and it wasn't there. And I thought, this is really weird, because whatever that is, it's a huge number, and it's being reported by the Office of Inspector General of the DOD. So that should be a story, right? At least, you know, you ought to have reporters assigned to it and say, what the hell is this? Because the budget that year was, I think, about $500 billion. And then it says that there are these entries in it for expenses and income that totaled $6.5 trillion. So you got to say, this needs to be explained. And it was just blacked out. It wasn't there. So that was my piece in Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting. It was a journalism story. But I did find out one interesting quote from a plaque for the OIG's office when I called. She said, well, this is normal accounting procedure to round up numbers and stuff when you're doing accounting. And she said, for example, and she gave me an example where this one area of the Army budget had a balance of 0.02 billion and it was changed to 90 billion. And she said, so that, you know, that's just a rounded up number. They just plug in a different number. And, you know, I thought, that's really ridiculous. So I just tucked that away. And then last fall, Professor Mark Skidmore at Michigan State University, who's a professor specializing in public agency accounting, also had been troubled by that number. And so he and two of his grad students went and looked at all the files they could get online from the OIG's office and looked at their various audits. They've never audited the whole Pentagon, but the OIG every year looks at one part of the Pentagon budget and does a report on their accounting. And every year they find these made-up numbers. So when Skidmore tallied them up for 1998 through 2015, he came up with a figure of $21 trillion in these figures, which the OIG kept saying, these are not supported by ledger entries. So what are they? And the thing is, nobody ever went to jail. Nobody ever was fired for these numbers. The OIG would call them out and say, you got to fix this. But it happened year after year, and there was no consequences for it. And not only that, but clearly these things were being done not by some lazy accountant who said, oh, I can't get this to add up. I'm just going to put in this number. They were being signed off on by senior people, and thus it had to be something that was approved by higher-ups.
It's pretty amazing. In fact, in your article, you have Deputy Secretary of Defense Patrick Shanahan saying, quote, we failed the audit, but we never expected to pass it. As you wrote, Shanahan suggested the DOD should get credit for attempting an audit, and then said, quote, it was an audit on a $2.7 trillion organization, so the fact that we did the audit is substantial. So that's enough, I guess, over at the Pentagon that, well, we tried.
It's also enough at the nation's great free press journalism outfits like the Times and the Post. Nobody
bothered
to say to him, well, didn't you guys refuse to do an audit for 26 years? They just looked at it this year. Well, they failed the audit. And of course they failed the audit because it's such a big organization. So, you know, is this a total baloney thing? And where are we then? You know, I've gone back and forth on this with Skidmore, Professor Skidmore, who really did terrific work. What he says is that you cannot know what those numbers are because the OIG can't explain it and hasn't tried to explain it. So he speculates that it could be anything. It could be secret funds flowing into the Pentagon. And he makes the argument by, for instance, citing the Army budget that 2015 year in which there was an entry on the expense side of $974 billion in accounts payable. That's like bills owed, right? And there was another entry of 700 and some billion dollars that was a cash transfer from the Treasury. That was in a Army budget that totaled $122 billion that year. So a cash transfer of 700 and something billion is an eye-opener, right? And especially because that was much bigger than the entire Army budget that year. I tried to find out from the Treasury Department whether there really was a cash transfer of 700 and something billion dollars, and I couldn't even get their press office to respond to me. I tried to file a Freedom of Information request, and they haven't done anything with it.
I'd like to remind listeners that this is the Project Censored Show. I'm Mickey Huff with Chase Palmieri. We're speaking with independent journalist Dave Lindorf, and we're discussing his recent piece in The Nation magazine titled "The Pentagon's Massive Accounting Fraud Exposed, How U.S. Military Spending Keeps Rising, Even As the Pentagon Flunks Its Audit." And Chase Palmieri, you wanted to jump in here.
Yeah, Dave, this is not the first time that concerns have been raised over missing funds at the Pentagon. And I'm paraphrasing from your recent piece in The Nation now. On September 10th, 2001, Donald Rumsfeld called a press conference where he announced that the Pentagon could not track down $2.3 trillion worth of transactions. He followed that statement up by saying that trying to track down these missing funds could be a matter of life and death. And what we know is that it was giant news for the 1 24-hour news cycle, but then the very next morning we had the September 11th attacks. I'm wondering if you think that there's any strange connection to the fact that this announcement was made the morning prior.
I actually don't. You can come up with all kinds of fanciful theories about that, but first of all, $2.3 trillion is a lot of money, right? If it's real money. And I thought that the fascinating thing about it, unless you buy in that Rumsfeld was in on a giant secret conspiracy to take down the towers and blow up part of the Pentagon, he appears to have stumbled on this and have been genuinely upset. In that same press conference, he said, "The enemy is not Russia or China, it's the Pentagon bureaucracy." He seemed really genuinely upset that this was going on and wanted to get to the bottom of it. But then the next day, the news cycle moved on and the focus of the Pentagon moved on. Rumsfeld was the ultimate micromanager. And the reason I included this quote was that what it shows is that even some of the top management of the Pentagon may not know what the hell other units are spending money on. And that should be as worrisome as anything else, that this is like a machine that's running on its own steam and doing things that maybe even the civilian management doesn't know is happening.
Dave Lindorf, I just wanted to clarify, too, for listeners, when we talk about these kind of numbers, particularly when we talk about the war budgets, this war money, this money to push American hegemony, right? $1 trillion is a one with 12 zeros. $1 trillion, a stack of $1 bills, right? $1 trillion would go a quarter of the way to the moon and weigh 10 tons. You could spend over $50 million every day of your life and still have money left over after you die. It's absolutely astounding, however, then, when we then go back to the topic here, they can't account for this.
And another thing to think about is, you know, people get all worked up about fraud and waste in the Department of Education or the Department of Health and Human Services, but both of those are in the realm of $50 and $60 billion budgets per year.
Yeah,
and
annually,
now we're talking about $717 or $716 billion in the base Pentagon budget, which is just operating the military and the extra supposed contingency fund for war, and not counting all the other things that are part of defense, which when you add them all together, plus the debt on all the wars we've paid for on borrowing, you're up to around $1.35 trillion, I think.
So I'd like to remind listeners, we're talking to Dave Lindorf. We're speaking about an exclusive piece he has for The Nation that's out now. You can see it at thenation.com. You can see Dave Lindorf's other work at thiscan'tbehappening.net. Also, of course, you can go to Project Censored and search there for Dave Lindorf, L-I-N-D-O-R-F-F. And you can see a lot of the work that we've picked up from Dave Lindorf over the years. We're going to take a brief musical break. And when we come back, we're going to continue our conversation about how this actually got out there in the news cycle, since these folks in the corporate media weren't terribly interested. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Project Censored Show. I'm Mickey Huff with Chase Palmieri. On today's program, we are speaking with the muckraking journalist Dave Lindorf of thiscan'tbehappening.net. We're discussing his recent piece that he wrote as an exclusive for The Nation magazine. Also, just like to remind our listeners that Dave Lindorf is a contributor to The Nation, has written for Salon, London Review of Books, and Tarbell.org. Again, you can find him at thiscan'tbehappening.net. Dave Lindorf, your piece on the Pentagon's massive accounting fraud exposed is something that we've been talking about here on the program, and I wanted to jump into a couple of other facets of this story, but I think that Chase Palmieri wants to jump back in here.
Yeah, Dave, I wanted to dive a little bit into the why you think these numbers are missing, and one assumption could be made that there are some off-the-books classified military operations being run through the Pentagon. You mentioned possibly some operations in Niger, but then you might also think that top management is sifting some of this money off the top to pad their own pockets. So I'm wondering where you think that this money might have ended up.
What's been suggested to me by my sources in the article is that what we're seeing here is an effort to, as I think it was Chuck Spinney, the famed whistleblower who blew the whistle on a lot of very costly Pentagon boondoggles and ripoffs back in the 80s, said was an effort to paralyze Congress and media by making the Pentagon's budget completely undecipherable. And also unauditable, because you cannot, as these auditors found out, you cannot audit it because the numbers don't make sense. And you can't find prior years to look at that are reliable because they've been doing it for so long. None of the budgets make any sense at all. So I think that part of it is that, and then part of it is that these numbers imply all through the financial statements that the Pentagon's spending all the money that it gets each year from Congress, which may not be the case. It may be, and this is what was suggested to me, that the Pentagon is spending less than it gets each year, which is a no-no in any organization. You're supposed to spend your budget so you can ask for more. And so what they do instead is they don't spend all the budget, but they say they do, and then they ask for more, which Congress, especially since 2001, gives them, maybe even more than they ask for. And then they have this leftover money they didn't spend, and there's a lovely Pentagon term of art called nippering, where they snip it out of one budget and move it into a different part of the budget and don't give it back. And they nipper things, I'm told, a few times through cycling it through different parts of their system until it's untraceable. Spinney told me about how this happened before in 1980s he exposed it with some other whistleblowers at the time. And what they found was, and this got into congressional hearings, is that the Pentagon was, that was a time of fairly high inflation. I think the at one point, 1 year, it got up over 10%. The Pentagon was including a 30% bonus amount in its budget requests to allow for inflation, and Congress was giving it to them. And then at the end of the year, they should have returned what was not actually an inflationary amount, but instead they tucked it away in something called a merged surplus account, which hid the money, and nobody noticed it because the Pentagon wasn't being audited. And it reached a point of somewhere between 50 and 100 or 60 and 100 billion dollars, which back then, as Everett Dirksen used to say, was real money. And some of that, Spinney said, he and his colleagues believe was going to fund Iran-Contra.
You have in your article here, veteran Pentagon staffers say that this practice violates Article 1, Section 9 of the U.S. Constitution. You write here from the Constitution, it says, no money shall be drawn from the Treasury, but in consequence of appropriations made by law and a regular statement of account of the receipts and expenditures of all public money shall be published from time to time. So I'm not sure what time it is right now.
25 years isn't time to time by anybody.
That's what I mean. Yeah, that's what I'm getting at.
Imagination. Yeah, one of my sources said, really angrily, he said, you know, everyone who works at the Pentagon swears an oath to uphold and defend the Constitution of the United States. And this is totally unconstitutional, what they're doing with the Pentagon budget.
And as you said earlier, this is not something that's been front page story in the corporate press. It's been missing in action. But there is a reason that this has been floating out of the Twitter sphere. The soon-to-be congressperson from New York, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, actually tweeted about your article in The Nation, but apparently didn't accurately interpret it. So could you tell our listeners a little bit about what that was about?
She's a veteran tweeter, and she saw this story, apparently, and so she tweeted it out. Oh, The Nation says the Pentagon has this $21 trillion of unaccounted funds, and that would be enough to fund two-thirds of the 10-year cost of Medicare for All. And the numbers sort of add up, but the article makes it clear that while we don't know what these numbers are and we can't really say that all of it doesn't represent any money at all and that there might be some of it that's secret money flowing into the Pentagon that's not appropriated by Congress, there's no evidence that that is the case. We haven't found a single case that we can say, other than a little suspicious thing about the $700 billion fund transfer into the Army. But I think that's also a fake number, like the other numbers, because it's so huge anyway. And so there's no solid evidence of secret money flowing to the Pentagon that wasn't appropriated. But the interesting thing about that tweet by Ocasio-Cortez, which is that it was fact-checked by the fact-check columnist at the Washington Post, who awarded her 4 Pinocchios for the tweet. But in the course of doing so, he said that the Nation article was correct and that the research work done by Professor Skidmore was correct, that there were these entries in the Pentagon's books for $21 trillion over the course of 98 to 2015. And I had to laugh because that's the first time that $21 trillion number,
right,
which has been out there since Skidmore's paper was published back in the fall of 2017, it's the first time it's been in the mainstream media.
Well, so the corporate media has ignored it until they were able to point out, and because, let's remind listeners too, of course, in case they don't know, that Ocasio-Cortez is a very progressive young Democrat that unseated
a self-described socialist.
Yeah, exactly. And so the corporate media
She knocked off a 10-term congressman, a pro-banker Democrat in Manhattan.
But now, of course, she's in the crosshairs of the corporate press, and I think that they relished the opportunity to kind of call her on this.
Even though they've had to admit that the Pentagon is making up, like, huge numbers in its books.
Notice that that's not the frame of the story.
We're calling them out on and thanking Ocasio-Cortez for getting it into the mainstream press.
You mentioned that you're going to have an update, is it, on this article in the December 12th issue of The Nation?
Well, no, it's not an update. We put the article out online. It hasn't been in the print issue. The original plan was, because we wanted to get it out around the time that the November 15th release of the Pentagon non-audit, which I told them was going to be a non-audit. I had been advised by people at the GAO and elsewhere that there would be no audit. It would be a fail, a giant fail. And instead of an audit, it would be a list of thousands of deficiencies that have to be fixed before they can even do an audit. So I had told The Nation that was going to happen, but I did say it's going to come out on the 15th and we need to have the story out right away, because sooner or later, I thought that sooner or later, someone like the Times or the Post would assign a team of journalists to dig into this and find out why the hell they failed the audit. But no, they didn't even really care about the audit. It was a passing piece of news. But because I worried about that, I said, you know, we've got to run this thing right away within days of the audit coming out. So they obligingly put it on their website as the lead story, and they figured they would run the print version in the next issue in an inside story. But this story has gotten so many hits on the website and gotten so much attention nationally, it was on the Takeaway and stuff, that they changed their mind and it's going to be the cover story on December 12th issue.
So Dave Lindorf, there was a section of your article that I found especially troubling. You stated that the Federal Accounting Standards Advisory Board proposed classified programs should be permitted to falsify figures in financial statements. Now, this seems like a move even further away from transparency around the Pentagon budget.
It's worse than that. It's actually codifying into the accounting standards exactly what the Pentagon's been doing for all these years in its financial statements, which is falsifying numbers and moving money around to hide it.
Right. So is the worry now that this is going to become a blueprint or a free pass for other government bodies to falsify their financial figures?
If they aren't already. I looked at the comment letters because it was a guideline that was proposed over the summer, and then there was a 90-day comment period, and they published the comment letters, and there was a comment letter from the OIG's office at the DOD, which was criticizing it and saying it's a bad idea because it would make the audits unreliable. Duh. And then there was a second comment letter from the Office of the Undersecretary for Finance at the Pentagon saying it's a great idea. Then there was a letter of support for the idea from HUD, the Department of Housing and Urban Development, which, to my understanding, is not engaged in any classified activities, but maybe there's something we don't know. Catherine Austin Fitz, who was one of my sources, her name got mentioned in the article, but the stuff she had to say about HUD got cut out. She was an assistant secretary of housing and urban development in the 90s, and she quoted North, Oliver North. She heard he had said to someone she knew that HUD was a candy store for getting money to fund illicit activities the government was engaged in. So with all those mortgage bonds and everything, it was basically a candy store to pick money out because of all the things that were going on in the mortgage markets. So that was interesting that HUD wrote a comment letter supporting this move. And then there was a comment from something that had a heading of another government agency and was unidentified in their letterhead. And of course, that was the CIA, and they were enthusiastically supporting the change in the accounting rules.
And just to clarify, this proposed legislation actually passed, right? And that
it's not legislation. It's a guideline that was approved by the FASAB. The FASAB is like the FASB in the private sector, which sets the rules for accounting.
But so, it is now the new norm.
It's now the new norm. And interestingly, it went into effect October 1st, and in a letter to government agencies at that time from the FASB alerting them that it had been approved, it said, and it will apply to the fiscal year 2018 financial statements that you put together, which was the ones that were being audited by the Pentagon.
My goodness. You have another quote. We're going to wrap up this little segment and talk about a few other things, but you have another great quote in here from Jack Armstrong, who spent more than 5 years in the Defense Department's Office of Inspector General as the Supervisory Director of Audits before he retired in 2011. And he said, if the DOD were being honest, they would go to Congress and say, all these proposed budgets we've been presenting to you are a bunch of garbage. That's pretty remarkable.
Yeah, especially for a guy in that position.
That's what I mean. And he's basically admitting that this is going on, and yet everybody seems to look the other way, people in the Pentagon and the corporate press.
There was another important statement made by one of the people that talked to me on the record, like Jack, and that is Asif Khan at the GAO, who heads the National Security Asset Management Unit of the GAO that monitors the budgets of the Pentagon, the CIA, and those groups. He told me, and this is incredible because I've never seen this written in the mainstream press, the GAO has a list, a high-risk list of departments that are vulnerable to fraud, abuse, and waste. And guess who's up there at the top of that year after year?
Yeah.
The Pentagon. That should have people, you know, with pitchforks and tar buckets going down to Washington to tear the place apart. How can we possibly have the largest unit of our government eating up the largest amount of our taxes be on the high-risk list every year for fraud, abuse, and waste?
And then it fails its only audit.
And then it fails its audit. And, you know, Asif Khan told me there's not going to be a successful audit, and there's not even going to be an audit. He said, we've had partial audits getting ready for this over the last 3 years, and all three of those years we've gotten a list of several thousand deficiencies that need to be fixed before we can do the audits, and none of those have been fixed. And he said, now we're doing a big one, and all we're going to get is thousands and thousands of more deficiencies reported that have to be fixed before the place can be audited. And he was absolutely right.
Again, this is really amazing. And of course, there have been some studies and there have been some articles in the Washington Post and some other places that have mentioned that if we were able to scale back the military budget to a smaller percentage of the GDP, you could free up trillions of dollars over the course of a decade. And then, but then when you translate that and what that money could pay for, I do think then that that's where you kind of get where Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was heading with this, right?
Yes, absolutely. Dwight Eisenhower at the end, he actually said a more important speech in 1953 than the speech that he's famous for in 1960. In 1953, as he was starting his first term, he said,
yeah, I have it right here. You wrote, every gun that is made, every warship launched, every rocket fired signifies, in the final sense, a theft from those who hunger and are not fed, those who are cold and not clothed. You wrote that, what would Eisenhower say today about a Pentagon that deliberately misleads the people's representatives in Congress in order to grab more money for itself, while hunger, want, climate breakdown, and other ills increasingly afflict the nation? Well, I think we'd know that because in 1961, right in his farewell address, right, Eisenhower warned us about the dangers of the military-industrial complex, and I think we're certainly seeing how those problems have been exacerbated. And again, very grateful for you, Dave Lindorf, that you've been writing about this story for quite some time. And I certainly invite our listeners to go to thenation.com. The Pentagon's massive accounting fraud exposed, how U.S. military spending keeps rising even as the Pentagon flunks its audit. We're speaking with investigative journalist Dave Lindorf. You can learn more about Dave Lindorf at thiscan'tbehappening.net. Lindorf has several stories that have been highlighted in the Project Censored annual volumes over the year, and he's a guest on the program here with us today once again. After this brief musical break, Chase Palmieri and I, hosting here for the Project Censored show, we're going to return to another topic that's happening right now in the news. And Dave Lindorf, you're going to stay on with us, and we're going to talk about the ongoing hagiographic propaganda blitz that is going on in the bipartisan state and corporate media regarding the now late President number 41, George Herbert Walker Bush, former head of the CIA. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff, in studio with Chase Palmieri. For the program today, for the hour, we've been joined by investigative journalist Dave Lindorf. Earlier in the program, we've been hashing out his stellar article for The Nation, The Pentagon's Massive Accounting Fraud Exposed. And for the remaining time we have here today, we want to talk about a story that is, of course, just dominating the 24/7 news cycles, the cable cycles, network news, etc. When it's not all Russia all the time, it's now all George Herbert Walker Bush. The 41st president of the United States passed away recently. And, of course, the listeners to this program may be aware of many of the things that George Herbert Walker Bush had going on in his long life. He was 94 years old. There have been several great pieces that have come out, one by Paul Lewis Street, Counterpunching the Corporate Media's Hagiographic and Selective Memories of George Herbert Walker Bush. That's on Counterpunch. There's also on Democracy Now!, Greg Grandin taking us down a walk through Memory Hole Lane. So, Dave Lindorf, you are no stranger to George Herbert Walker Bush. So, tell us some of your memories of the whoppers of the Bush hagiography that we're being treated to right now.
The one that I find the most painful to remember was his war against Iraq in the Gulf War. Just the images of the mass slaughter of fleeing Iraqi soldiers up that highway of death through Kuwait when the war was really over, and these guys were just trying to get home, and they were driving tanks with the cannons pointed backwards. They were in cars, and they got this huge traffic jam on that highway, and then the U.S. just sent planes from all their aircraft carriers and just had this bombing party where they just slaughtered everybody there, and the images of that were just nightmarish. I also knew a guy who was a tank driver in the famed tank battles of the desert in southern Kuwait, which were not battles. The thing was that the U.S. tanks had longer range than the Iraqi tanks and were using depleted uranium shells. They go right through steel like butter and then ignite inside the tank and turns it into an inferno, blows up the ammunition inside and fries everybody inside the tanks. So there were no shots fired back at American tanks. There were no battles. And this particular guy I knew just came home and couldn't stop crying because he said it wasn't a battle. It was just a massacre. And most of the Iraqis that were killed were not the elite. They were draftees who didn't even get uniforms. They were in street clothes and street shoes in the desert facing the mightiest army the world's ever known. So what that was, Bush got all these kudos for being this hero, along with Schwarzkopf and Powell. But the truth was that this was just a one-sided massacre, which Bush knew was not even justified because we had lured Iraq into going into Kuwait after sort of implying that we understood that the Kuwaitis were stealing his oil.
Let's not forget, too, that the other fiasco leading up to Iraq was the Panama invasion to unseat narco-trafficker Noriega, Manuel Noriega, who was on the CIA payroll dating back to the time when George Herbert Walker Bush became.
He was in the CIA
and inherited Noriega, and then that was sort of like a training ground for what they were going to end up doing in Iraq, and they killed thousands of people in the barrios of Panama City that the corporate media never bothered to report about during that invasion.
Latin America was a playground for George Bush when he was CIA. He inherited also Operation Condor, which was sort of an Operation Phoenix, like in Vietnam, only in Latin America, where they were just offing people. The role of the CIA was to coordinate all these military regime secret police so that they could catch, you know, the classic thing that leftists would do in Latin America was to flee one country when they were in danger to another country. And there was a tradition in Latin America of protecting people when they would flee from another country. But the U.S. turned it around and had them catching the people that were fleeing Pinochet in Chile when they went to Paraguay or Argentina, or catching people who fled Uruguay when they went to Brazil. They unified basically the police state in Latin America through the CIA's friendly services.
It's pretty amazing. And George Herbert Walker Bush made it one of his missions to lick what was called the Vietnam syndrome. And of course, we saw Reagan, you know, doing that with Grenada, and then we saw Bush doing it in Panama, and then in the Iraq War. You had mentioned, you know, some of the bogus issues that were going on in 1991. Let's not forget Naira, the daughter of the Kuwaiti ambassador, who was coached by the American public relations firm Hill & Knowlton with taxpayer money to lie to Congress about how allegedly Iraqi soldiers were throwing Kuwaiti babies out of incubators.
Bush knew that that was a lie.
And he repeated it over and over again and was talking about, and when this short massacre had ended to be continued by occupations and then brutal sanctions that killed over 1.5 million people, 500,000 people under the age of 12, that later Bill Clinton's Secretary of State, Madeleine Albright, in an interview claimed, "We think the price is worth it," about having these people die as a result of sanctions. Again, this is just pretty riveting. Bush said to joint session of Congress after the Iraq invasion, he said, "Kuwait is now free." He said the same thing about Panama after Noriega, that it was now somehow free. But I mean, again, these were not free democratic states. So I mean, again, they're rewriting history as they go.
And redefining freedom.
All the time, ever doing so. So let's talk about a few other of the issues that are going on here now. The kindler, gentler George Herbert Walker Bush, right? This is the one that the corporate media and both Republicans and Democrats in Congress are telling us, and even liberals are pining in the era of Trump and Trumpism. And it's less the kind of friendly fascism that we were warned about in the 1980s. But it's interesting to see, Dave Lindorf, I'd like to hear your view on this, that we actually see some liberals pining.
They're saying, you know, he was a funny guy and he was gracious in handing over power to Clinton, that kind of thing. It's sickening to see this because he's a patrician New Englander posing as a Texan who is comfortable in Georgetown parties and can get along with Democrats because he gets along with the Democrats who have the same criminal values that he does.
Many of the neoliberals. And so let's remember that it's not just George Herbert Walker Bush. They also gave us George W. Bush and Jeb Bush, right? And so this is a whole dynasty here. And by the way, we could go back a little further, including going all the way back to Bush's time in the CIA in the late 50s and 60s when he was likely an asset. And he might be the only man in America that didn't remember where he was the night JFK was assassinated, November 22nd, 1963. He was in Dallas, Texas. That's a pretty striking story, and he claimed on the record he didn't recall where he was or what he was doing while he was an asset for the CIA.
Yeah, and nobody else can't remember.
So, Chase Palmieri, you want to jump in here?
Yeah, Dave, I just thought it was funny that you mentioned how the media's referring to George Bush as being a funny, somewhat charismatic political fella, when many of us might think about George Bush as the last uncharismatic president to have been in office. In fact, a large part why he lost to Clinton was because he was not seen as very charismatic and was known as a fairly cold individual. And I can take understanding with many in the media who are weary of talking bad on the recently deceased, but I also think it's important to be intellectually honest about political figures especially, because otherwise we risk having a Reagan situation where years later we praise them as perfect political figures when in reality it was very far from that.
Absolutely. The way he dealt with, for instance, campaigning against Dukakis with the Horton ad was about as ugly and racist a campaign tactic as we've had in the post-civil rights era.
The Willie Horton ad. Was that Lee Atwater?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's going back
and Bush rode it to victory.
He did, of course. Well, Dukakis didn't help when he was riding around in that tank. And
John Kerry killed himself when he came out on the stage to accept the nomination and saluted. He probably would have won the election if he'd come out in his Vietnam flak jacket and let his hair grow a little reminded us that he once had stood against the war.
And threw his medals over the White House fence. Not to open up too big a can of worms, but it's likely that he did win that election because of election fraud, but we won't open up that can of worms right now. So Noam Chomsky talked about this concept, unhistory, right, riffing from George Orwell. The idea that this is stuff that just goes down the memory hole, we forget about it, this hagiographic revisionism. We just saw this not long ago with John McCain, right? And Paul Street, who Paul Street, who has the piece in Counterpunch on this issue. William Rivers Pitt has a great piece over at Truthout as well on this hagiography. Paul Lewis Street wrote, he's got away with words. He wrote, "You thought the war criminal John McCain death trip was bad. Hold on to your seats for the Orwellian history liquidating death orgy of imperialist killer Bush 41. At least Street doesn't mince words and talks about the record. And he goes on and on here to talk about so many of the things. When you talked earlier, Dave Lindorf, about what happened in the first Gulf War, you were talking about the highway of death. And again, one of the quotes from that was that it was like shooting fish in a barrel.
And exactly, yeah.
Pretty amazing how much the corporate media and the bipartisan state can just gloss over, as Chase was pointing out, just gloss over this in the name of good taste, that they will bury the unhistory. They're creating unhistories as we go. And let's not forget, you know, today's fake news is tomorrow's fake history, Dave Lindorf. And, you know, as someone that teaches critical thinking and history, as well as working at Project Censored, the people coming into college right now are sole products of No Child Left Behind, started by George Walker Bush, the dumbing down of America's school system and teaching to the tests, and the privatization of public schools to charters and so forth. This is all part of a big movement, and these people are coming into college right now. They don't remember Bill Clinton. They certainly don't remember George Herbert Walker Bush, and they barely have memories of George W. Bush or any significant understandings of the ongoing war on terrorism. So we've got a lot of work ahead of us, and education is a big way to counter that, Dave Lindorf. And you've been writing for decades now as a journalist, an independent journalist.
Yeah, I hate to say how many.
But I think we need more Dave Lindorfs, and I'm really excited and happy to see you with such amazing and great breaking stories. I'd like to remind listeners that you're listening to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff, with Chase Palmieri. We'll continue our conversation with Dave Lindorf after this brief musical break. Stay with us. We only have a few minutes left here, Dave Lindorf, and since by day I have the educator hat on, I just wanted to hear, what are any hopeful words that you can conjure in the times here that we live, based on your work, based on your long experience as a journalist? You know, what are some things that we can be looking for? What are some things we can do, do you think? What are some words of hope we can give to the millennial generation?
I got a 25-year-old son who's a videographer and a 34-year-old daughter who just got her doctorate in education at Oxford and is living in England and probably will stay there with her boyfriend. But
you have a place to go then.
Pardon?
You have a place to go.
Yeah, I have a place to go. I'm not sure how good it'll be unless Corbyn wins, but, you know, she's a little worried about that too. But at any rate, you know, I hear from them things that make me very encouraged. I mean, granted, they grew up in my house, but my son tells me, for example, that most of his friends consider themselves to be either socialists or anarchists, and they don't trust anything they read in the paper. So that, to me, is very encouraging, and I see it in his friends. He's got a range of friends. He's been active as a b-boy, you know, doing breakdancing for years and does it for entertainment. His best friend is really an ace at it. One of the things is these kids are all very multiracial. My son's Chinese ethnically because we adopted him in Hong Kong. And all races get along together among millennials. This whole racist bull crap that people my generation who are white are full of racist ideas, and even people who are liberal have sort of deep-seated racist fears when they admit it, that they try to overcome, you know, to their credit, but they're there, and not with these millennial kids. So, you know, in that sense, they're becoming skeptics because they're living a really struggling life, trying to get by on low wages and jobs that get terminated or turn into non-jobs, contract labor, no benefits. Their world is pretty harsh compared to when I was growing up, and they see that. So I think there's a real opportunity for that generation to turn a new leaf politically and become much more radical than even they are now. I think there's a tendency to keep them quiet through signing Brito petitions and stuff, but eventually they're going to be in the street.
Well, that's probably where more people need to be. And of course, Chase Palmieri here, our co-host, is a millennial himself, and he's very active in media. And of course, some listeners of the show know that he was involved behind Tribeworthy, an online source that was rating news sources like Yelp and Rotten Tomatoes. And Chase, let's just let you have one word here, because you are one of these young people that is changing things. And you're working with us at Project Censored on this show, and you're working on other things of your own.
I think our generation, you're absolutely right, Dave. Our generation was born and waking up into what we inherently felt and knew to be a non-ideal situation. And so I think that the millennials have been seeking solutions from a very young age, and that can radicalize certain groups of people in the millennial generation one direction or the other. But I do think that this is really just a long-term pendulum swing. And right now, millennials are very focused on solving the problems, very skeptical of the information being provided to them that tells them that everything is fine and dandy when day-to-day they're living paycheck to paycheck, and a lot of the opportunities they see in front of them are shrinking or disappearing. So I think in many ways the millennial generation is scared, but also somewhat hopeful that we have what it takes to mop up the mess that was left to us by previous generations. But again, every generation is better than the next. At least in America, in this country, it seems to be, life seems to be getting better on all metrics. So it's hard to complain too much because we have it better than anybody else in history, but there's a lot to clean up, and millennials are focused on doing that.
Well, I also think, Dave Lindorf, you know, teaching, we at Project Censored, we work with people on over 20 campuses around the U.S., and we see a lot of promise and hope in our young students. And when we hear that young people don't care, or they're unplugged, or they're checked out, I see the very, very different thing on the colleges we work with. And
I agree.
It's definitely there. And I think we need to keep reminding all of us, we need to remind ourselves that those kind of narratives from the top down, the Clinton Democrats were blaming millennials for the election she won but lost. And again, that's just not accurate information, Dave Lindorf. And we know that, and you know that. And at the Project, we're proud to work with young people, and we think we need to be in this together transgenerationally across all lines, because, of course, where we're headed here in the Trump age, we've been coming here a long time, 30, 40, 50 years, but the mask is off, and I think we really need more muckraking journalists like you, Dave Lindorf, to help us peek behind the curtain, see what's really going on, and get busy with constructive media and solutions-based journalism so that we can get ourselves out of these messes. So, Dave Lindorf, once again, thank you for joining us for the hour. It's always a delight to have you on the Project Censored show.
I'm glad to be on it, too. Glad you're doing what you do. It's a crucial job that Project Censored does.
We're in our 42nd year, and Andy Lee Roth and I, we're working on our next book already, and our recent book is out. It's Censored 2019, Fighting the Fake News Invasion. You can learn more at projectcensored.org. Dave Lindorf's recent piece at The Nation is on Pentagon massive accounting fraud. You can see it at thenation.com. You can follow Dave Lindorf's work at thiscan'tbehappening.net. Dave Lindorf, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Mickey, for having me on. Bye-bye.
Supporting human conditions, not free market propaganda and corrupt politicians, cause they own by special interest groups that fund their campaign. That's why you hear the same old things they claim, but change never came. It's a dirty game maintained by rain for capital gain.
You've been listening to the Project Censored show, established in 2010 by Mickey Huff and Peter Phillips. Mickey Huff is executive producer and host of the program, with myself, co-host Chase Palmieri. Anthony Fest is our senior producer, and Dennis Murphy is our associate producer. The Project Censored show airs on over 40 stations around the United States, from Maui to New York. To learn more about our work or to find any of our previous archived programs, go to projectcensored.org. Please follow and like us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and be sure to subscribe to the official Project Censored show on your cell phone's podcast app. Feel free to share your feedback about our work, and last but not least, thanks to you, our listeners, for tuning in. We'll see you next time. Created by criminal minds, political ties, habitualized alibis, disguised under the guise of democracy, politics, and the apocalypse. Got the skies looking ominous. So the ocean burned bright with waves full of poison. Genocide wars fall for little poison. The weapons manufactured paid for by attacks upon the bridges and the levees and the mines collapsing. All the prisons build the capacity citizens. And the times for the master thief, combine, conquer, steal a masterpiece. Open your eyes and realize what's happening. Time's running out to reach all potential. Fame at the table, then you're probably on the menu.